Good morning, good morning, good morning, and welcome to another edition of Tree Huggers International on 107.7 The End. My name is Tommy Howe, and Tree Huggers International is a weekly natural science and environmental affairs program for the listeners of 107.7 The End and all of Western Washington, from the Columbia River to the San Juan Islands and everywhere in between. Good morning, and welcome to Tree Huggers International. In 1964, the landmark Wilderness Act was passed, declaring, quote, "In order to assure that an increasing population, accompanied by expanding settlement and growing mechanization, does not occupy and modify all areas within the United States and its possessions, leaving no lands designated for preservation and protection in their natural condition, it is hereby declared to be the policy of the Congress to secure for the American people of present and future generations the benefits of an enduring resource of wilderness. For this purpose, there is hereby established a national wilderness preservation system to be composed of federally owned areas designated by Congress as wilderness areas." And with that, and then President Johnson's signature, the Wilderness Act came into being. The 1984 Wilderness Act followed 20 years later, adding thousands of additional acres to the nation's sanctioned wildlands. And one of the champions and civilian watchdogs of the Wilderness Act is the Wilderness Society. And we are very, very, very fortunate to have with us today the senior policy analyst of the Pacific Northwest region of the Wilderness Society, Bob Freymark. Bob, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Tommy. It's a pleasure to be here.
I think the best place to start, and I want to talk about the impending Wild Sky Bill and where that is in Congress, but let's talk just for a minute about what is wilderness. If someone's just tuning in and you say, well, you know, wilderness could be my backyard, wilderness could be the environment I enjoy on Cougar Mountain, but what is wilderness as the Wilderness Society sees it?
Wilderness, the way the Wilderness Act defines it, and as was passed by Congress and signed into law by President Johnson, is already public land. This is land that is owned by the American people and managed in trust for the American people by federal agencies like the U.S. Forest Service, the National Park Service, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and Bureau of Land Management. Now, you might think that because it's already in public ownership, this land is protected. That is not the case, because there's a lot of interests out there who want to use it, either use this land for mining, for logging, for ranching. In some places, that's entirely appropriate uses. But in the last places that we have in this country that are not developed really are found on our public lands, and that these lands provide really spectacular values to the American people. And so what Congress did by passing the Wilderness Act is created a mechanism by which Congress and the American people can say, this part of the public land we need to set aside for this generation and for future generations, so that we can enjoy all the wonderful values that are there, and we'll let natural processes work there. And so these lands are lands that are in the public estate. These lands generally have very little impact from humans. They're set up and supposed to be managed in a way that man is a visitor and leaves no imprint of that. And so you can enjoy the spectacular nature and all the wonderful activities you could do there.
So there is a benefit to having wilderness beyond the aesthetic and the recreational value that it provides.
Well, there's definitely a recreational component to it. A lot of people believe, and I do believe, that there's a spiritual, you feel very close to God in whatever you make that out to be when you're out in nature like that in the wilderness area. But then there are some quantifiable, practical values from having wilderness protected. Having a place where forests filter air for clean air, watersheds, there are literally hundreds of communities that depend on protection of their watershed through wilderness and other land designations. The recreational component itself is an economic driver for many communities. There have been some studies in some communities that are adjacent to lands that are protected of wilderness that the values of the private land holdings go up. There's all sorts of different benefits from wilderness aside from just the wildlife habitat component and recreation component.
In 64, when the Wilderness Act was passed, was that kind of a high watermark for a lot of the conservation movements at that time?
The passage of the Wilderness Act, I don't think there's any act quite like that or any law like that quite in the world. There are other land protection measures in other countries, but the Wilderness Act is quite special. There's some people who think it's the only piece of legislation in the United States that actually has a soul to it in terms of how it's written. It's quite eloquent and talks about the land being protected in an untrammeled way, and talks about managing the land for the natural processes, and talks about future generations and things like that. And it's I think it is one of the high water marks of our conservation movement. You know, the time of Earth Day, passage of the National Environmental Policy Act, the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, those are pretty big too. But the Wilderness Act is special because it really captures, I think, the imagination of the American people in terms of protecting the environment and sort of the culture and the wilderness of which our country was really founded, and as we migrated from the East Coast to the West Coast. And it really tried to capture people's relationship to the land in a lot of ways.
It has something in common, dare I say, with some of the founding documents of the United States, because it acknowledges one's mortality. And it's a piece of legislation. It's something written on paper that says, this will be around long after I'm gone and long after my children and grandchildren will be gone. And just as the founding documents are meant to keep the United States intact for generations and generations, the Wilderness Act, it recognizes the fact that this land is going to be here long after we're gone. And we want to hand it off to the future generations in as good a condition as we have it right now. And I find that to be very significant in legislation.
I think that's right on. And if you look at people who work in the wilderness movement, in the conservation movement, they're doing it because they think it's important. And part of that importance is what they pass on to future generations. And that's integral. You hit the nail right on the head.
And let's talk about the 1984 Wilderness Act real quickly, because that was a real boon for wilderness lands in Washington State. I know a lot of the brothers and Colonel Bob over in the Olympic Peninsula. There was this large gap basically between 1984, when the 64 Act was amended with additional acres, and then today, where we're sort of getting wilderness, at least in this part of the country, in kind of a piecemeal fashion. And now we have the Wild Sky Wilderness in Snohomish County that's finally making its way through Congress. Why is there such a large gap between 84 and now? What's been going on?
Yeah, I think there was a little bit of lull. I think it's actually been increasing. I think even during the last few Congresses, we have been getting wilderness bills passed. I mean, part of what's going on is we're kind of running out of wild country, and we're having more population pressures. And so politically, a lot of these issues are getting a little more complex, and it's taking a lot more hard work and a lot more finesse to work these issues. We got distracted in the Northwest a little bit during the what we call the old growth or spotted owl days, when there's some really contentious natural resource issues that we were grappling with. So I think that kind of set us back in terms of wilderness protection. It was all important, and we had some actually pretty good gains as a result of that. But what we're seeing now is extremely popular support for Wild Sky, 106,000 acres, within a few hours of downtown Seattle, which is really exciting. There's broad-based support for that. It's bipartisan support. And I'm thinking this might be a trend that we're going to start seeing more and more of these wilderness bills start to pass in Washington.
And as far as the Wild Sky Wilderness goes, can you tell me exactly where in Washington State, where in Snohomish County this is? And how big it is?
Yeah. If you're driving on Highway 2 towards like Stevens Pass, you pass the town of Index, and it's a bunch of acreage right north of there. So it's the Skykomish River Valley. It's right there. It's extremely easy access from Highway 2. It's a very popular place with a lot of recreationists, and you actually can see it a lot from Highway 2 as well.
Do you know about what the elevation is there? 1,500 feet?
I think that's where it kind of begins, but then it climbs pretty radically to pretty high on some of the peaks, and I don't know the peak elevation. One of the values of Wild Sky, one of the really chief values, is that it contains 80,000 acres of old-growth and mature natural second forest. 14,000 acres of that is rare low-elevation old-growth, below 3,000 feet. And that's one thing we don't have in our wilderness system in Washington State is those low elevation acres. And that's something that Wild Sky is going to help provide. And that, well, why that's important, Washington State, of course, is you get the lower elevations. They tend to be more accessible year-round. So, you know, the wintertime or the fall, when things you typically get snowed and you can't go hiking anymore, some of these river trails and low-elevation creek areas are better access. But there also, there's a certain habitat that only low-elevation forests provide, and we have a real dearth of that in terms of public lands that are really strongly protected here in Washington State.
I was going to ask you what makes Wild Sky unique, and I was not aware it had that much low-elevation old-growth forest. That's almost impossible to find anymore. And this was never harvested. This has been left alone all this time, or it's been nibbled at?
There's a certain component of it that has not been managed by humans, but that part that has is kind of in a restoration mode and is appropriate for being designated as wilderness.
And how long has Wild Sky been kicking around? When was this first proposed to be a wilderness area?
It was first considered under the 1984 bill, and we were unsuccessful at getting that acreage put into the bill. I mean, part of the deal was that in the 1984 bill, we were not as successful at getting some of the greater acreages of forested components to the wilderness system. The timber industry was pretty successful in keeping a lot of those areas out. And that it turns out, you know, a lot of those areas are just not appropriate for harvesting trees. And for a whole variety of reasons, from protecting habitat for endangered species, be it spotted owls or salmon or marbled murrelets. But, you know, the appropriate thing is to protect it as wilderness. And you know, we've successfully worked with the congressional delegation, Senator Murray, Representative Larson's, whose district it is, and they've just been incredible champions of really pushing this through and going out to the public and saying, what do you want here in this land? This is public land. This is your land. What do you want to be done with it? And this is what, you know, we've getting the public support for. It has incredible values. The towns of Index, Sultan, Gold Bar, huge recreation components to those towns and industries, whether it's kayaking, whether it's fishing, whether it's hiking, rock climbing. There's all these human uses of the area, as well as, again, the natural values that provides for wildlife habitat, for species that are endangered of going extinct or that we want to see remain in the landscape in large amounts that we can experience and our children can.
If you're just joining us this morning, this is Tree Huggers International on 107.7 The End. My name is Tommy Howe, and our guest this morning is the Senior Policy Analyst of the Pacific Northwest Region of the Wilderness Society, Bob Freimark. Again, Bob, wonderful to have you here this morning, and thanks for joining us. I'm thoroughly enjoying this conversation, and I was wondering if you could take a moment and kind of explain or tell us about the Wild Sky's journey to where it is now from when it was proposed. Yeah, I know, like 4 years ago, I was writing letters to certain folks in Congress about this.
Yeah, it's been an interesting journey, but, you know, most wilderness bills actually do have an interesting and longer journey than we would like. I think the first time it was really proposed in a piece of legislation was in the 1984 Washington Wilderness Bill. For whatever reason, conservationists and the public were not successful in pushing that through the 1984 bill. And the proposal lay dormant for wilderness and picked up, I guess, about 5 years ago. But what happened is that despite the fact that we've had wonderful congressional champions, huge public support, bipartisan support, the way the politics worked in Washington, D.C., with the way the committee chairmen were set up and the majority that was in power at the time, actually prevented us from moving the legislation through key committees. We were always confident that if it ever went up to a vote in the House of Representatives and the Senate, that it would pass. But it just got bottled up in a congressional committee with a key committee chairman holding it up. And it took that congressman not returning to Congress in this last session of Congress for this really to have a better chance of movement in this Congress. And we're in a very good situation. The Wild Sky Bill has passed the House of Representatives. And it has passed a key Senate committee, and we're just waiting for the appropriate time for it to make the final passage to get a vote in the U.S. Senate. It has passed the Senate before in previous Congresses, and there's been tribute from both parties of this is the way that you do a wilderness bill with all the public outreach and all the support that it gets. And so we're just waiting for the politics have to just be right, because politics is very tricky. as we've learned, but we're pretty confident that it's going to go through. And we're hoping that this will be the start of movement of other wilderness bills in Washington State.
Do you think there's been a change the last couple of years in the public's perception of just doing things for purely ecological or environmental reasons? And not just beyond Al Gore and global warming, but it feels to me like there's been a change in attitude the last few years.
The attention that is being brought to global climate change, global warming, you know, former Vice President Al Gore has done a tremendous job of publicizing that. But I think he's actually, you know, just part of the movement. I think people are really finally educated. I think there's a consensus that these are serious problems that we really need to address as a society. And I think people are finally kind of pulling together and recognizing that we really have to do something. And so, I think there's been an attitude change. You know, I think it's looking promising for some positive action. You know, you could just see it in Congress where they're actually having hearings on these types of issues. And we might actually see some legislation that helps out with that. I'll draw back to wilderness. Setting aside key areas that have been provided for key biological diversity, wildlife habitat, and where natural processes have been worked and untampered and untrammeled by humans, are a key component of, you know, how we need to protect our environment. And that's going to be a key part of the package. And I think people are recognizing that.
Let's talk about the Wilderness Society and the Wilderness Society's mission for a moment. Can you tell me a little bit about how long the Wilderness Society has been around and what it does?
Yeah. The Wilderness Society is a national conservation organization, and we were established in 1935. And interestingly, the reason it was established was because they saw this dramatic loss of wild land, loss of public land, in ways that they saw a legacy, our heritage being disappearing before their eyes. And they thought there needed to be a dedicated organization just focused on public lands, protecting that last wild lands that we had in the United States. And they were very passionate. We had some very serious thinkers about wilderness and nature who founded the organization. People like Robert Marshall, people like Aldo Leopold. These were basically wildlife and forestry philosophers in some ways. And they really were passionate about protecting these wild lands. And they wanted an advocacy group working to create a network of lands that would be protected for current generations and future generations. It started out, I think, with just 7 people in the organization, and now I think we have about 200,000.
Wow.
Nationwide. And anyone can join the Wilderness Society. You just have to contact us, and we'll keep you informed as to what the issues are. And we need everyone's help because these are public lands, and everyone, all American citizens, have a stake in it. We have about 8 regional offices throughout the United States, from Alaska to Atlanta. Yeah, and we're working hard to make sure our lands that are special to all Americans are going to be there for today and for tomorrow, for our children and grandchildren.
I'm really glad you've emphasized public lands a couple of times, and I think that's something that's very, very important. And when wilderness is set aside, it's already coming out of public lands. And it's not that we're locking up the land. As long as you have 2 feet, maybe some hooves, you have access to it. But what do you, and I'm going to have to get an off-road vehicle person in here one of these days. I'm going to have to. I mean, I really, because I like to get all sides. And, I've heard a lot of bubbling and gurgling over the last couple of years that some trails may be modified so that ORVs can use them. Now, of course, ORVs, off-road vehicles, aren't supposed to be in wilderness areas. You know, mechanized does not go with the whole mission statement of the Wilderness Act. But has the Wilderness Society seen any chipping away of that? I know there's a wilderness area in Central California that's basically bisected by an ORV corridor. How does the Wilderness Society engage with ORV enthusiasts?
The land that we're advocating for is public land, and so everyone has a right to their view and to advocate for how they want to see that land used. We think that there are ample opportunities for motorized use on other parts of the landscape other than those lands that really don't have roads or or trails for motorized uses as yet. There's literally thousands of miles of places where ORV enthusiasts can go. So, and we're going to, your question was, you know, how do we engage? And we're going to talk to people at, as we work through wilderness bills. Wilderness bills are focused on areas that are largely untrammeled by humans or are not developed by human use, and includes ORV use. And so what we're saying is, okay, let's take the little bit of wildlands that are remaining in our public estate, and it's set them aside for natural processes, for recreation, for all the uses that you can do in wilderness. You know, whether you want to go rock climbing or take your dog out for a walk on a trail. But ORV use, there's lots of other places to do it. And we'll just, as we work together proposals, you know, we're going to talk to ORVers. We're going to be talking to snowmobilers. We're going to be talking to everyone. And that's the way we do it. You know, and the reality is, today's political climate, our politicians are going to want to talk to these people just like we'll want to talk to people. And we're going to try to come as close to consensus for a proposal as we can. But, one of the things that we're finding is that, you know, the population of Washington State, and we cover Oregon as well at the Northwest Regional Office, you know, it's increasing dramatically. We're having all these population pressures, development pressures. You know, it's getting, if you go out on our national forest on a weekend in the summer, it gets increasingly hard to find trails that are not, you know, where literally dozens of people are on, or campgrounds, finding a campground site. All that's real difficult. What we want to do is to make sure we're going to have enough land, enough places that we have the opportunity to utilize as well as share with our wildlife and other friends out there.
And one of the benefits of wilderness is to find solace. One of the benefits of wilderness is to not be around motorized and mechanized things. One of the reasons people go to such lengths to go to wilderness, and why in part we set these places aside, is so that we can go and not have to deal with the things that we deal with in our day-to-day lives, which include internal combustion engines. That's my statement, folks. That's me entirely, but that's how I feel about that sort of thing. The Wilderness Act seems to be in line with that. The Wilderness Act seems to understand that, yes, we are living in an increasingly urbanized and mechanized society. Can we have some place where we just don't have machines? Does anyone mind? You know, can we have some place set aside where quiet is a reasonable expectation without having to be in the library? Can we have some place on this earth, in North America, where quiet is a reasonable expectation where one can commune with nature? I don't think it's much to ask. And there are so many places where ORVs are already permitted. Why wilderness?
Now, that's exactly right. And it's, you know, when you look at how our lands are getting developed in such a rapid way, the loss of green spaces, the loss of forest, we don't think it's too much to ask to set aside some land where we can have some solace, some solitude, some place where we can get away. One of the values of wilderness is intensifying. It's having a place where you could establish a relationship. I go hiking with my sons, who listen to the end, by the way. but these are places where you could really, you could go off by yourself, or you could go with small groups of people, and really, really find yourself, really understand each other, have times for conversation, times to just really think about what's going on. And it's a respite from modern life, you know, from cell phones, you could have cell phones in wilderness, but from the daily interactions that we have that are so prevalent in our mechanized world.
It's not about the fishing. It's about what you talk about while you're fishing. Hey, Bob, this is the million-dollar question, and I'm glad you brought up your children, because this is the question I always ask folks. It's about stewardship. And one of the big, big things I try and bring to the table with this program is bringing back this idea of stewardship. It seems to me that younger folks seem to view the outdoors almost exclusively as a place where you pursue dangerous activities. And the outdoors are marketed that way to kids that age. It's like, that's where you go bungee jump off of a bridge, or do some crazy move on your snowboard on a ski jump. And there's more to the outdoors than extreme sports. There's more to the outdoors than what is at your local ski resort. We have an immense amount of wilderness set aside as public land, but someone has to step up and help take care of that, and help protect it, and help preserve it. I mean, Forest Service Rangers, National Park Service Rangers, etc., they can't be everywhere at once. There are a lot of interests that would love to get their hands on a lot of the public land that recently we almost take for granted because we haven't had to fight to make sure they're going to be there. How in the world do we sort of reestablish this connection with kids the way might have had 40, 50 years ago, where there's this idea of stewardship? It's public lands. It belongs to all of us. I'd love to know if you got any thoughts on that, because I'm looking for the answer.
Stewardship, it's a wonderful concept, and it's an important one that we have to teach our children. And what I found is that it's important. One of the first things that you could do for education of stewardship and teaching responsibility and ethics is the first thing you have to do is kind of understand what the value of what it is that you're in trust of, what you're caring for, what, you know, what your obligation is. You have to understand it. And the first thing you do is have to go out there and experience, or at least have knowledge of it. That's why I think it's so important to get people out into the wilderness, out into the forest, and experience. And once people start to understand something, I think they start to have more respect for it. And part of what we are obligated as society is to help teach people how to be good stewards of that land. One of the things where a role of government, a role of the U.S. Forest Service, for example, in terms of some of the lands we're talking about, such as Wild Sky, is the American public has entrusted these lands to a government agency to manage it on behalf of the American people, including our children. And the obligation of our federal government is to be good stewards of that land. And actually, that's whether it's the Wilderness Act or the Clean Water Act or whatever act, it's just a way of really trying to enforce good stewardship. And that's why the Wilderness Society was established. We think if people really take a step back and understand what the values of these lands are, they'll understand what are the stewardship activities that we need to provide. And also, we have an obligation to share this world with others, whether it's humans or other creatures. And our public lands, the wilderness, that's all part of how we're trying to be good stewards of the land.
Bob Freimark, well said. You know, I could talk about this all day, but we have absolutely begun to run out of time. Bob Freimark, absolutely appreciate you joining us this morning, and thank you so much for making some time to come down here today. Senior Policy Analyst of the Pacific Northwest Region of the Wilderness Society. It's wilderness.org, correct?
That's correct.
Wilderness.org, and then from there you can go and find your local chapter wherever you may be.
Yeah.
Outstanding. Bob, I hope to catch up with you again one of these days. I really appreciated this conversation. Very nice talking with you.
Oh, this was great, Tommy. Thank you so much.
You're very, very welcome. Thank you. All right, well, that is going to about do it for this week's edition of Tree Huggers International. We'll be back next Sunday morning at 7:30 with a show about green architecture and sustainable design. And while I know those terms have become hip catchphrases and pickup lines at Bonnaroo, we've got a full-on panel of three Seattle-area architects who have largely spent their careers in sustainable design, and they're going to tell us all about it and also explain why the new library in Ballard has grass on the roof. The answers might surprise you. But don't start tearing off your roof tile just yet and putting sod on top of your insulation. Just wait till next week. The opinions and statements expressed on Tree Huggers International do not necessarily reflect the views of everyone at 107.7 The End or Entercom Seattle. And if you have a beef with something you may have heard, feel free to contact me, Tommy Howe, at though@entercom.com. One of these days we may start doing a letters form, but as the producer of Tree Huggers International, you'll want to touch base with me because as producer, I am solely responsible for this program's content. Again, Tommy Howe at though@entercom.com. You can say nice things too, and if you're right, please tell me how to say your name, and please tell me where in the area you are. Thanks again to Bob Freimark from the Wilderness Society for joining us this morning. You can learn more about wilderness and the Wilderness Society's mission at wilderness.org. And remember, you can always listen to Tree Huggers International anytime for any reason by going to the Tree Huggers International page at 1077theend.com and clicking on the episode you want to hear. You can also go to treehuggersintl.com. We'll be back next Sunday morning at 7:30, but in the meantime, relax, put on a pot of coffee, make a bowl of cereal, scramble some eggs, and wait to get out of your jammies and get ready for Jim Keller's Resurrection Flashback Sunday next on 107.7 The End. See you next week. Be well.